In 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29 and 30, we read, "And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure, and breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. And people of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom." In the 16th verse of the third chapter of 1 Kings, there is one instance, one illustration of the wisdom of this man, Solomon. It happened like this. The story says there were two hearts. And that's especially important because their lives were so low that their testimony was suspect no matter what they said. Two prostitutes came to the king to have an argument settled. "Please, my lord," one of them began, "this woman and I live in the same house. I gave birth to a baby while she was with me in the house. 3 days later, this woman also had a baby. We were alone. There were only two of us in the house. But her baby died during the night when she rolled over on it. Then she got up in the night and took my son from beside me while I was asleep. She laid her dead child in my arms and took mine to sleep beside her. And in the morning when I tried to nurse my son, he was dead. But when I looked more closely in the morning light, I saw that it wasn't my son at all. And I looked, and there my baby was in her bosom. And now, O king, I'm asking you to make her give me back my little baby boy." That's what one of the harlots said. Then the other woman interrupted, "It certainly was your son, and the living child is mine." "No," the first woman said, "the living child is mine and the dead one is yours." And so they argued back and forth before King Solomon. Now, just how would you resolve a thing like that? There are no witnesses, and the two women that stand there before Solomon are of the lowest character. Then the king said, "Let's get the facts straight. Both of you claim the living child is yours, and each says that the dead one belongs to the other. All right, bring me a sword." So a sword was brought to the king. Then he said, "Cut the living child in two and give half to the one woman and half to the other." Then the woman who was the real mother of the living child and who loved him very much cried out, "Oh no, my lord, give her the child. Please do not kill him." But the other woman said, "All right, he will be neither yours nor mine. Divide him between us." Then the king said, "Do not kill the child, but give him to the woman who wants him to live, for she is his mother." When all Israel heard the king's decision, the people were in awe of the king, for they saw the wisdom God had given him for rendering justice. That's wisdom. That was the gift of God. That's just one instance of the wisdom of Solomon. Now, I don't want to talk to you about the wisdom of Solomon today, but I do want to talk to you about wisdom from the 90th Psalm. In about the middle of Psalm 90, there is verse 12 that says, "Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." What does it mean to number our days so that we may gain a heart of wisdom? To gain a heart of wisdom is to learn the lessons of this psalm. Learn the lessons of this psalm and you will be a wise person. And what are the lessons of this psalm? Well, the first lesson is human life is brief. We all know this, but we try to forget it and we try to ignore it. We even try to prolong it beyond what is possible. Today, people are always falling for new, easy ways to lose weight. In days gone by, there were other money-making tricks. In the Old West, a medicine man would come through town peddling elixirs that promised to do all kinds of amazing things. One medicine man came through a town one day selling an elixir that would add 100 years to your life. He said, buy it, drink it, add years to your life. Maybe live for no telling how long. And he said, if you don't believe it, we'll add years to your life. Look at me. I've been drinking this stuff and I'm 390 years old. One man in the crowd didn't believe it and said to the medicine man's assistant, did you hear that? He says he's 390 years old. Is that true? And the assistant said, I don't know. I've only been with him 140 years myself. Psalm 90 uses several figures to press home to us how brief our lives are on this earth. Verse 5 says, you sweep men away in the sleep of death. The picture here is of time as a swift moving stream of water, and we are carried along in it. I graduated from high school with a girl named Ricky Pace. She married a man named Rusty Hodges. Rusty Hodges was a swimmer. He grew up competing in swim meets and winning a lot of them. When Rusty Hodges turned 50 years old, he decided he was going to swim across the Mississippi River as something of a benchmark of his 50th birthday. He didn't try to swim it at Memphis. It was too dangerous there. He went down south of Memphis, somewhere between Memphis and Helena, Arkansas, in August on one Saturday afternoon. He left his wife on the bank and jumped in the water to swim across. He got out in the middle of the river and the current started to carry him downstream. He was being swept away before the eyes of his wife. She panicked and called the rescue squad. They came and found him a mile down the river where he struggled out on the other side. When I read that story in the commercial appeal of Rusty Hodges being swept down the Mississippi River, it reminded me of this psalm. The picture in Psalm 90 is that life is like a mighty river that we are trying to swim across and striving and struggling, and finally at last it sweeps us away in death. Man's brief life is also compared to grass in the psalm. Verse 5 says, you sweep man away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning. Though in the morning it springs up new, by evening it is dry and withered. Charles Haddon Spurgeon said, commenting on this psalm, here is the history of grass. Sown, grown, blown, mown, gone. And the history of man is not much more. Natural decay would put an end both to us and the grass in due time. Few, however, are left to experience the full result of age. For death comes with his scythe and removes our life in the midst of its vitality. How great a change and how short a time. The morning saw the blooming and the evening sees the withering. Verse 10 says, the length of our days is 70 years or 80 if we have the strength. Yet their span is but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. Moses himself lived to be 120. But Moses was the exception. As a general rule, men don't live more than 70 to 80 or 90 years. There are exceptions. But even if we live to be 120 like Moses, the years quickly pass away and then we fly away. When I was at Bassett, Arkansas, there was a woman named Mrs. Burkett. She was a highly educated and sophisticated woman. She reminded me of the Queen of England. She attended Wellesley College from 1918 to 1922 and then Columbia University in New York. Her father was a doctor and left her a large plantation in Bassett, Arkansas. She attended the little Presbyterian church in the little town of Bassett, Arkansas. She used to quote a poem to me by Oliver Wendell Holmes about a man who had grown old. The last stanza of that poem goes like this: "And if I should live to be the last leaf upon the tree in the spring, let them smile as I do now at the old forsaken bough where I cling." The poem is called "The Last Leaf on the Tree." Mrs. Burkitt would quote that poem and then she would say, "I am the last leaf on the tree." She outlived all of her friends and she was the last one of her clan. And her days soon came to an end and we had her funeral. One of the lessons of Psalm 90 is that our days here are numbered. They are finite, and when they come to an end, life on earth is over. Psalm 90 is talking about this when it says, "Teach us to number our days." It's not that we need to count days to improve our arithmetic. We need to realize that our days are numbered. That is, we only have a finite number of days on this earth. Those days will come to an end someday. I did a funeral for a lady a few years ago who would have been 100 years old on her next birthday. They were planning a 100th birthday party for her, but she didn't make it. Our lives do have an expiration date on them. Craig Barnes had a friend named Nancy whose life was being devoured by leukemia. She mistakenly received in the mail a letter from her doctor to another doctor explaining that she only had 6 months to live. She went to the grocery store to buy groceries and she picked up a box of baking soda that she needed and she looked at the expiration date on it and the thought came to her all of a sudden that she would not even live past the expiration date of that box of baking soda. She actually lived 1 year longer than predicted, and she lived every day with gratitude to God for that day because she learned to accept every one of them as a gift. A heart of wisdom is a heart that has come to grips with the brevity of human life on this earth. A second lesson from this psalm is that sin is our main problem. Psalm 97 and 8 says, "We are consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence." It was the sin of the Israelites that turned God's wrath against them and caused them to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. But more than that, it is the sin of man that has brought the sentence of death upon the whole human race. In Genesis 2, 16 and 17, the Bible records that God placed man in the Garden of Eden and the Lord God commanded the man, "You are free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. For when you eat of that, you will surely die." In Genesis 3, Adam and Eve ate of that forbidden tree. Sin entered the world and death as the penalty for sin. Psalm 90 verse 3 says, "You turn men back to dust, saying, 'Return to dust, O sons of men.'" That is certainly a reference to Genesis 3:19, where God said to Adam, "For dust you are, and to dust you will return." God made man out of the dust of the ground and breathed into him the breath of life, and man became alive. Man sinned against God, and the penalty for sin is death, which is a reversal of that process. Man's body returns to the dust, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. A heart of wisdom realizes that the only reason death ever entered the world was because of sin. Death is the penalty for sin, and it comes so quickly for all of us. But our sin is the main problem. The third lesson of this psalm is that God is eternal. Verse 2 says, "Before the mountains were born, are you brought forth the earth and the world from everlasting to everlasting. You are God." We divide time into three periods. We divide it into the past, the present, and the future. All of us have birthdays in the past. Our parents had birthdays, and their parents before them had birthdays. Everyone who has ever lived on this earth can point to a day when their life began. We study the past and we call it history. History is the record of man and all of his experiences. We look back through history and we can pinpoint specific dates when people and events had their beginnings. We can also note when certain things came to an end. In 354 AD, Augustine of Hippo was born in North Africa. North Africa was a province of the Roman Empire. Augustine significantly affected the history of the church for all of these generations. Saint Augustine. In the year 355 BC, Philip of Macedon had a son named Alexander. That was the beginning of the life of Alexander the Great, who conquered the world by 323 BC and made it a Greek empire. The further we go back in time, the harder it is to specify dates. But around the year 1000 BC, David was born. That was the beginning of the life of the greatest king of Israel. About 2000 BC, a little baby boy was born in Egypt during the years of the oppression of the Hebrews. That was the beginning of the life of Moses, who led his people out of Egypt and wrote this psalm that we are studying today, apparently while the Israelites were wandering around in the desert. Everybody and everything has a beginning. But you can go back all the way to the creation of the world and beyond, and there is no beginning for God. God is eternal. He is from everlasting. We cannot speak with as much certainty about the future as we can about the past, but if we have learned anything from the past, it is that empires and nations and strong men in our own lives come to an end. Empires and nations and great men of the earth in our own lives come to an end, but God endures. The Egyptian empire that oppressed God's people in Moses' day came to an end, but God endures. The Babylonian empire that destroyed Jerusalem and carried God's people away to captivity came to an end, but God endures. The Greek empire of Alexander the Great came to an end. The Roman Empire that ruled the world at the time of Christ and persecuted the early church under Nero and Domitian came to an end in 410 AD. Before Augustine died, when Alaric and the Goths sacked Rome, but God endures. Go as far into the future as you can and God will be there. He is eternal. He is from everlasting in the past to everlasting in the future. 1,000 years to us is a long time. 1,000 years to God, according to this psalm, is like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. If 1,000 years to God is like a day, then 365,000 years would be to Him like 1 year to us. And 25,550,000 years to us would be like one of our lifetimes to God. To God, 1,000 years is not even like a full night. The night was divided up into four watches of 3 hours each. The psalm says that 1,000 years to God is like one watch in the night, 1/4 of a night. The point is that lives on this earth are so temporal, so transient, so brief, but God is eternal. When Sir Winston Churchill died in 1965, in many ways it was the end of an era. At his funeral in St. Paul's Cathedral in London, Isaac Watts' hymn, "O God, our help in ages past," based on Psalm 90, was sung. And for anyone who even bothered to ponder it just a little bit, there was a clear and unmistakable message. The message was this: the old statesman who had led England through some of her darkest hours in history, was gone. Swallowed up in that stream of time that bears all its sons away. But God remained. And God still remains. He endures from everlasting to everlasting. And our only hope for something that endures is in God. If we want what we are doing now to endure, then we must have God's help. If we want to endure, then it will have to be with God in eternity. If we want to endure with God in eternity, then we must make Him our dwelling place now. That is really the message of this psalm. Get an eternal perspective. This life is brief and uncertain. It will come to an end one day, and then there is eternity. God is in eternity. Will He be favorable to me in eternity? He will, if you will make Him your dwelling place now. Is He your dwelling place? What is a dwelling place? A dwelling place is a residence, an abode. Where do you live? Do you live with the true God on your mind and in your heart every day? Jesus said in John 14:23, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him, and we will make our abode with him." We will make our abode, our dwelling place, with him. He will be your dwelling place if you will seek him now, and if you will come to him through Jesus Christ, whom to know is life everlasting. Let's pray.